is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Education, higher education, college and university. What is taught? Where are we in liberal education in America? I welcome Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution. He's on the Stanford campus, but we're turning to his column in Real Clear Politics about a proposal called the General Education Act. This would be for the whole of the country in order to correct certain excesses that have created tension on the campus right now with anti-Semitism, but for quite some time now, tension on the campus about teaching young people in America why America is so successful. Peter, a very good evening to you. The General Education Act, it's a proposal. To whom is it addressed and what is it? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Yes, both questions are important, and I want to emphasize that first. To whom is it addressed? You're right that it's a proposal that's in principle for the whole country, but the model legislation is designed for state legislatures, and it's designed for public universities. Private universities could adopt it, but the general model. But the draft legislation is meant to be handed over to state legislatures around the country. And if they so wish, it gives them an outline for creating within our public universities, not only the flagship state university, but other ones, independent units. The proposal calls them schools of general education, which will be devoted to providing what we call, and is properly called, liberal education. And they'll do that in two ways. One, they will be responsible for offering a 13-course core curriculum that will be required of all students at the university. But they'll also, as an independent unit, have the authority to give out degrees, including graduate degrees, in various areas of liberal education.
Once upon a time, it was called liberal arts education, and I believe my degree is a liberal arts degree, a BA. And
yes,
there were requirements. This is ancient history. It's the middle of the 20th century. There were requirements that as freshmen and sophomores, you had to meet in order to qualify to be an upperclassman, that is, to have a major, to specialize. And I recall just a few of them. We had a science component, a literature component, a history component, a language component. I don't think we had a math component, but is that the general direction? We're talking about large areas of knowledge that would be a fundamental, whether or not you're going to major in that area.
Actually, but by the way, John, I faced a similar set of requirements at Swarthmore College, but this proposal is actually more old-fashioned, in the best sense, than the requirements you faced at Princeton, which I faced just a little later at Swarthmore College. Because the so-called general distribution requirements invite us to take some small number of courses in different disciplines, say social sciences, humanities, and the natural sciences. Some colleges also require fine arts. This proposal has got 13 core courses which involve substantive knowledge. For example, to graduate, according to this legislative proposal, every student at the university will have to take a class on American government. Every student will have to take a couple of classes on Western humanities. Every student will have to take a class on modern literature. And every student will have to take a class on world civilizations, along with classes in rhetoric, sciences, natural sciences, and economics. So some real particular substance requirements. And the idea is there are some ideas, there are some lines of thought, there's some controversies, there's some events like the American Revolutionary War, the Protestant Reformation, World War II, that every person who claims to be educated should have some knowledge of.
I read from your report of the core curriculum, A4 semester credit hour course of Western humanities. Does this read 11,000 BC, which would be the building of cities? That would be before the Common Era to 1450. That would be up to and but not including the discovery of the New World. So we're looking at European civilization as it meets Asian civilization. This would be regarded generally as irrelevant in today's university environment, wouldn't it, Peter?
Yes, and certainly not only in many many universities, or I should say among many faculty, not only would be regarded as irrelevant, it would be regarded as positively harmful, because all those people knew was, or everything they knew was infected with racism, ethnocentrism, sexism, and whatever other sins are in vogue among the fashionable set. So yes, they would be understood as not merely irrelevant, but as downright harmful. Let's focus on the most up to date, cutting edge writings. This curriculum takes the opposite view. In order to know who we are, in order to appreciate our institutions, in order to understand the background assumptions that inform our moral and political life, we have to understand the great ideas and seminal events of Western civilization. And we also need to do that in order to prepare ourselves to understand other civilizations, which is also a part of liberal education.
What has happened, Peter? I didn't pay attention for 50 years. How is this a radical idea to introduce what you'd have to say was common understanding of education when I was a lad, that you need to read widely? Where did it go?
Well, first of all, to emphasize your point, this will be received as a radical idea, as a departure, as actually a return to the old bad days of reading dead white men. How did this happen? Well, as you know, it happened in many steps. A crucial step was in the early 1970s, when the students of the 60s arrived in graduate school with a new slogan, a new understanding of the purpose of graduate education, and indeed the purpose of education. They understood education as politics by other means. Up until that point, it was understood that the job of a scholar and the job of a professor is really twofold: to transmit knowledge and cultivate students' ability to think for themselves. But with a new generation arriving at the universities, and then that new generation, once it became entrenched, having the ruthless idea that it must tenure only people like itself, a new idea became entrenched, no longer transmitting knowledge and cultivating students' ability to think for themselves, but inculcating in students the correct view about morality and politics so they could go out and change the world. And this generally meant change the world as left-wing progressives understood proper change.
Now, what you're recommending here, not you, but your article's recommending, seems to me very straightforward. Will it be resisted or embraced by public universities?
That's the great question. I think now that it's out, there will be efforts by the three centers that contributed to the drafting of the model legislation: the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, the Martin Center in North Carolina, and the National Association of Scholars in New York. I sit on the board of that last one. They will do their best, including with an online event this Thursday called Recentering Our Universities, to get the word out to state legislatures around the country that they now have a golden opportunity to incorporate into their public universities a unit, an independent union, that will actually do the things that justify, I would say, the use of taxpayer money for higher education. That is, cultivate the knowledge of and the virtues of freedom and democracy, and thereby making our college graduates better citizens.
And the great books, which I grew up with, we had a set of them, and that generally describes what education was before I got there, early 20th century. Is that incorporated in these recommendations, the great books?
Yeah, it is incorporated, but in a subtle and flexible way, by which I mean several of the 13 core courses stipulate that the great books must be taught, but they don't say which ones. I mean, they give some indication, Plato, Augustine, Shakespeare. They don't tell you which of Shakespeare's plays. They don't tell you which of Plato's dialogues. They identify eras from which you should read great books. In fact, there's only one exception. There are really only two works that they specify absolutely must be taught, Hebrew Scriptures and the New Testament, a book sometimes we just call the two books together, we sometimes just call the Bible. And their argument is that this is important, whatever your beliefs are, because as a matter of history, those two works, Hebrew Bible, Hebrew Scriptures, and the New Testament, no two books have had more effect on hopes, on imagination, on ideas, on the elaboration of law and political institutions, on the inculcation of virtues and vices, and so on. None have had more of an impact on the Western imagination than these two books. And so if you're going to understand ideas and events in the West, you need to read these books, again, regardless of your religious beliefs.
Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution writing at Real Clear Policy right now about a General Education Act proposed. We're going to turn to the trouble on campus today that the General Education Act might answer. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.